各位早上好，欢迎收听 2C 澳澳洲中文广播电台。今天我们非常荣幸邀请到新州上议院议员 Mark Buttigy 与我们一同参与节目。
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to 2C Radio. It's our pleasure to having Mark Buttigy, MLC, Parliamentary Secretary for Multiculturalism, Industrial Relations, and Work Health Safety. And it's our pleasure to having him today with us on 2C Radio. Hello, Mark.
Mark 现任新州多元文化事务、工业关系及职业健康与安全议会秘书。澳洲正面对有关多元文化、移民、社会凝聚力以及国家认同等重要议题的讨论。与此同时，生活成本上升及房屋压力也令包括异国党在内的政党获得更多支持。另一方面，中澳关系亦持续受到社会广泛关注。今天我们将会讨论澳洲的多元文化、异国党的崛起、中澳关系以及澳洲多元社会的未来。
Hi, Sally. How are you? Thanks for having me.
There is. It's our pleasure. So Australia is facing important conversation about multiculturalism, migration, social cohesion, and national identity. At the same time, rising living costs and housing pressure have contributed to growing support to parties such as One Nation, while Australia-Chinese relationship continue to attract significant public attention as well. So today we will discuss about multiculturalism, the rise of One Nation, and the relationship of Australia-China as well. So Mark, welcome to this show. To begin with, could you briefly introduce yourself and our listeners and tell us about your journey about working from as an electrical apprentice to union organizer and becoming a member for the New South Wales Parliament.
Mark, 欢迎来到 2CL。 首先，可否向我们的听众简单介绍一下自己，并分享您如何由一名电工学徒及工会工作者一步步成为新州议会议员？
Yes. So I started my apprenticeship, electrical apprenticeship, when I was 15 years old. I left school at year 10. I ended up going to university later. But I started my apprenticeship in 1982 with Sydney County Council, which is the electricity distributor. It's now called Ausgrid. And that's where I got all my training, my trade training. And then I did my training at TAFE, the technical and further education. And then I did electrical engineering there. And then I got involved in the Labor Party in 1993. I joined, but I was always heavily involved in the union, the electrical trades union. And I was a delegate. And then I ended up going to university in 1993 as well, actually. I studied political science. And then I did an honours degree in economics. And then all those things sort of came together. And the union asked me if I wanted to go and be an official with them, which I did in 2012. And then I spent 7 years with them. And then along with other unions, they helped me to go into Parliament, to New South Wales Parliament. So I got elected in 2019 and I've been there ever since. And now I'm the Parliamentary Secretary for Industrial Relations, Work Health Safety and Multiculturalism.
我15岁时便开始做电工学徒，我在10年级后便离开了学校。后来我重返大学进修，但我的学徒生涯始于1982年，当时在 Sydney County Council 工作，那是当时的电力供应机构。现在它已经改名为 Ausgrid， 我所有的技术培训都是在那里完成的，同时我也在 TAFE 修读课程，主修电机工程。1993年我加入了工党，同一时间我亦积极参与电工工会的工作，并担任工会代表。同年我也考进了大学进修，修读政治学，之后完成文学学士学位，主修经济学。这些不同的经历最终都汇聚到了一起。2012年工会邀请我成为全职工会干事，我接受了这个机会。 我在工会工作了七年，之后在工会运动的支持下，我在2019年当选进入新州议会，一直服务到现在。目前我担任工业关系、职业健康与安全以及多元文化事务议会秘书。
Yeah, we know that you're very busy on such a lot of portfolios. And what makes you choosing to pursue your career as a politician?
我们知道您目前负责多个重要职务，是什么促成您决定投身政治？
Initially, I got very interested academically when I did my degree. I was very fascinated by ideologies.You know, social democracy, liberalism, conservatism, communism, all those sorts of things. And then from my practical background with as an electrician and with the union, I thought it's good to have all this knowledge and ideas, but unless you're in politics, you can't really do anything about it. Like you can't put it into practice. And I thought I would like to do that. And also I like to communicate. I like to talk.So I thought this would be a good profession for me. So yeah, that's basically what motivated me to do it. Yeah.
最初我是在大学读书时开始对政治产生兴趣。我对不同的政治思想深感着迷，包括社会民主主义、自由主义、保守主义以及共产主义等各种政治理念。结合我作为电工及工会工作者的实际经验，我逐渐明白，单有知识并不足够。如果没有参与政治，就很难真正把理念付诸实践。我希望能够做到这一点。此外，我也很喜欢跟别人交流，喜欢分享与讨论不同的想法。因此，我认为政治是一份非常适合我的工作，这就是推动我踏上从政之路的原因。
So we know that you come from a migrant family as well, with your parents having migrated from Australia, from Malta. So how has your family background shaped your values and your view of Australia and your decision to enter as a politician?
您来自一个移民家庭，父母都是由马耳他移民到澳洲。您的家庭背景如何影响您的价值观、对澳洲的看法，以及您投身公共服务的决定
？Yeah, so I was born here, but my parents immigrated in 1955. My mother was only 9 years old. She came with her family from Malta, from a small village there. And my father came in the same year. He was 17, and then they met here.But growing up in Australia to migrant parents, I suppose I had a good appreciation for how welcoming Australia was and how many opportunities it provided. And I could see that all these different nationalities coming from all over the world, how much they loved the country because it gave them opportunity.And how much they valued being in Australia. And that made the country stronger because people worked hard and they dedicated themselves to the future of the country because they loved the country because it gave them opportunity. So I suppose that's my foundation for why I think multiculturalism overall is a very good thing for Australia. And I could see how over time the attitude towards multiculturalism evolved.So it started off, Australia started off as a quite inward-looking racist country, to be honest. You had the White Australia policy in the early years after Federation, and that went on for a long time. And then after the war, the Second World War, Australia needed a lot of cheap labour. So there was incentive to bring people in to work in factories and, you know,all those sorts of manual labour jobs and other jobs, small businesses, milk bars, whatever. But you still were expected to assimilate to the dominant culture. In other words, speak English, adopt our way of life, our food and everything like that. And then during the 70s, you had a fundamental shift because the Whitlam government under Minister Grasby came up with this cult this idea of multiculturalism. So we should let each culture practice its religion, speak the language, eat their food, spirituality, all those sorts of outlooks on life, because the idea is that it would make us as Australians evolve to be something better as a human being, because you're getting all these different influences coming in and you grow as a person. So that's where we are today, as a direct descendant of that philosophy of multiculturalism in the 70s, which I think is a very good thing. And it's one of the reasons Australia is doing well and has done so well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
我是在澳洲出生，但我的父母于1955年移民到澳洲。我的母亲当时只有9岁，跟随家人由马耳他一个小村庄来到澳洲。我的父亲也在同年来到澳洲，当时他17岁。他们在澳洲相识之后建立家庭，在移民家庭中长大，令我深深体会到澳洲是一个十分包容和欢迎新移民的国家。澳洲给予了很多人建立更美好生活的机会。我见证来自世界各地的人因为得到机会而真心热爱这个国家。他们努力工作，并愿意为澳洲的未来做出贡献。这也成为我相信多元文化对澳洲有正面作用的重要基础。我也看到澳洲对多元文化的态度随着时间不断演变。坦白说，澳洲曾经是一个相当封闭，甚至带有种族歧视色彩的国家。在联邦建立初期，澳洲实施了白澳政策，而且持续了相当长的一段时间。第二次世界大战后，澳洲急需大量劳动力，因此政府积极吸引移民来澳洲，在工厂及各类体力劳动行业工作。不少移民也创办了小型企业，例如牛奶吧及家庭式商店。不过，当时移民仍然被要求融入主流文化，他们需要说英文，接受澳洲的生活方式。到了1970年代，澳洲出现了一次根本性的转变。Whitlam 政府正式提出了多元文化的理念。这个理念认为，每个人都应该可以自由信奉自己的宗教，使用自己的语言，享受自己的饮食文化，以及保留自己的文化传统。大家相信，不同文化的交流能够令澳洲成为一个更美好的社会。透过彼此学习不同文化，我们可以成为更成熟、更包容的人。这套理念一直影响着今天的澳洲。我相信这是一项非常正面的发展，也是澳洲能够取得成功的重要原因之一。
So as we're talking about multiculturalism, so from a perspective, how important has the multiculturalism been to Australia's success? And what does it mean to practice in today's Australia modern society?
谈到多元文化，从您的角度来看，多元文化对澳洲的成功有多重要？而在今天的澳洲社会，它又代表着什么呢？
Well, I think it's been extremely successful overall.Because of the reasons I said, you're getting all these different viewpoints coming in and different exposure to different backgrounds, and it gives Australia an appreciation for the human race as a whole, which you otherwise wouldn't get. So, for example, in Australia, we've been very, very fortunate not to have been exposed to many conflicts on our domestic soil.And we've got a lot of natural resources, and things have come, compared to other countries, things have been quite smooth for us. And that's good, but it's also can be your downfall, because if things come too easily and you don't have to struggle for anything, then sometimes you can take it for granted and you can lose it. So other people coming in from other countries giving you empathy aboutstruggle and understanding how lucky we are, I think's been a good thing too. And then there's also all the other benefits, the different language, different religions, different mindsets, I think has contributed to us. And then, of course, all that skilled labor contributing to economic growth, because the more people you have from with different skills, the more productive you have and the more you can grow the economy. And for rich countries like Australia, the birth rate is relatively low. So you need people to come in. And the truth is, Sally, is when you have a world of how many billion people do we have now? Maybe 8 billion, something like that. With so much inequality and poverty and war, it's only natural that the rich countries should help. And it's only a matter of logic that people will want to explore other countries so that everyone rises up. So I think that's the fundamental basis for multiculturalism and why we shouldn't think you can't close yourself off from the world. You can, but it's not going to advantage you in the long run. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
我认为整体而言，多元文化是非常成功的。正如我刚才提到，澳洲能够受惠于来自不同文化背景、不同观点的人，这让澳洲人对整个人类社会有更广阔的理解。否则，我们很难拥有这样的视野。澳洲一直都很幸运。相比世界上其他国家，澳洲本土经历的冲突相对较少。我们也拥有丰富的天然资源，整体而言，澳洲一直相对安定。这固然是一件好事，但同时也可能是一种弱点。如果一切来得太容易，人们便容易视为理所当然。有时候，正是在这种情况下，我们反而会失去它。来自其他国家的人往往能提醒我们，澳洲其实非常幸运。他们让我们理解什么是艰难，也培养我们的同理心。我认为这是一项非常宝贵的贡献。除此之外，还有很多其他好处。不同的语言、宗教及思维方式都丰富了我们的社会。技术移民也成为澳洲经济发展做出重要贡献。拥有越多不同技能的人才，经济便越具生产力。像澳洲这样的发达国家，出生率相对较低，因此我们需要新的移民。当世界已经有超过80亿人口，而全球依然存在大量贫穷、不平等及战乱，人们自然希望移居到拥有更多机会的国家，这正是多元文化的基础。当然，你也可以选择把自己与世界隔绝，但从长远来说，这并不会对澳洲有利。
And we know that some argue in the recent years, Australia have faced a number of events that have tested our social cohesion mm-hmm. in our multicultural society. So do you believe that Australia's multicultural model is being tested? And what can the government do to strengthen trust and understanding between different communities in different backgrounds?
近年来，澳洲经历了不少事件，令我们的多元文化社会凝聚力受到考验。您认为澳洲的多元文化模式正受到挑战吗？政府又可以如何加强不同社区及不同文化背景人士之间的互信与理解？
Yeah, I think it is being tested, and it's not the first time it's been tested. We've had this happen in our history over a number of times. So it's not unusual in that respect. And there will always be opportunistic political opportunists who want to exploit that for their own benefit because they want to play into this idea that we shouldn't be bringing people in from other countries because it undermines our sense of being Australian, but also undermines social cohesion. I just think it's a very simplistic view of the world. Like, for example, we had the recent tragedy at Bondi, which is terrible. But, of course, to blame that on immigration is crazy, right? We had many years ago, maybe 30 years ago now, we had the Port Arthur massacre. that was a white Anglo-Saxon. I mean, these things will happen regardless of immigration because there are unstable people in the world doing crazy things, and you can't stop every single thing. What you can do is try and create social cohesion to the best of your ability by fostering everyone working and living together and promoting tolerance and openness. And I think despite all those challenges, we've done that pretty well. And government has got a huge role to play, because the moment government starts retreating from that, then those people who want to create an inward-looking society where we stop all immigration, like One Nation do now, they can actually get a foothold and take us backwards. If you see what's happening in America now, it's the same sort of philosophy. We don't want to go down that path.
Mm-hmm.
It's no good for the country. It's no good for us as human beings. And it's a very, very limited future, which they're going down now at the moment, that path, yeah.
是的，我认为他正受到考验。不过，这并不是澳洲第一次面对这类挑战。在澳洲历史上，我们曾多次遇到类似情况。因此，从这个角度来说，这并不罕见。政治上，总有人利用这些事件为自己谋取政治利益。他们宣扬澳洲不应该接受移民，认为移民会削弱澳洲人的身份认同和社会凝聚力。我认为这是一种过度简化的世界观。以最近发现在 Bondi 的悲剧为例子，那是一宗非常令人痛心的事情，但将事情归咎于移民根本是荒谬的。很多年前我们亦经历过Port Arthur 大屠杀，当时的凶手是一名白人澳洲人。这类悲剧无论有没有移民都有可能发生。遗憾的是，世界各地都存在精神状况不稳定的人，没有任何政府可以阻止每一宗悲剧的发生。政府真正能做的是尽最大努力建立社会凝聚力，这意味着鼓励不同背景的人共同生活、共同工作，同时推广包容与开放的价值。尽管这些挑战，我认为澳洲整体上做得相当不错，澳洲政府在当中扮演着非常重要的角色。如果政府开始放弃支持多元文化，那些希望澳洲重新变得封闭的人便会有更多的发展空间。这正是一国党今天所主张的方向，就是停止移民。如果真的走向那条路，澳洲将会倒退。看看今天美国所发生的事情，你会发现那里正出现类似的政治思维。我不认为澳洲应该走上这条路，这对国家没有好处，对我们作为一个社会，作为人类也没有好处，这只会令澳洲的未来变得狭窄。
Yeah, understood about that one. Because we know that a lot of people right now are due to the cost of living and the pressure of housing affordability, people in Australia is changing their political landscape right now.
Yes.
So do you think that Australia is moving beyond the traditional two-party system? And what would that mean for the country's future?
我们知道随着生活成本上升及住房负担加重，澳洲的政治版图正逐渐改变。您认为澳洲是否正逐步走出传统两党政治的模式？这将会为澳洲的未来带来什么影响？
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it remains to be seen whether or not we are. I mean, there's a couple of elections coming up which... we'll bear that out. We've got the New South Wales state election coming up in March next year, and then we'll have a federal election again within the next 2 years. I think there's certainly something going on, because those shifts in the polls are too consistent to not mean something. But I also think that it remains to be seen whether or not people will actually trust a party like One Nation with government, because they say a lot of superficially attractive things which might appeal to people, but I think when people actually look behind what solutions they've got, they may think twice. If they don't think twice and elect them, then unfortunately we'll have the experience of being governed by people who talk a lot but don't really know how they're going to solve the problems. On the other side, I think from the Labor Party's perspective anyway, I think we need to be very conscious of things like you mentioned, cost of living and housing, because I think the message they're sending us is that it is no longer good enough to just manage the economy, tinker around the edges, make a little adjustment here, Liberals come in, we take it back a little bit, we do this, we do that. People don't want managerialism anymore. They want proper reform and they want the government to take serious action. So, for example, on housing, they want us to be directly involved in providing more housing, for example, okay? The capital gains tax and negative gearing, which is actually a good policy because it's helping young people get into the market because it is having a material effect on house prices. But also those same people who might be considering One Nation might think, well, how come the super rich are not getting taxed? How come we don't get enough royalties or revenue from our natural resources? We let these companies ship it offshore and then they value add and bring it back. Why aren't we taking advantage of that and making it here and doing things like in Norway, for example, with a sovereign wealth fund? So my point is this, I think this could be a signal to party, all major parties, that we don't want you to muck around the edges anymore. We want you to structurally reform the economy for our benefit. And if you look at what happened in America, the reason you have the rise of Trump is because the Democrats stayed being a managerial party and they didn't do that. So maybe we have to learn from that. That's my thoughts anyway. Yeah.
这是一个很有趣的问题。至于是否真的正在发生，依然有待观察。未来将会有几场重要选举，明年三月将举行新州选举，之后两年也会举行下一次联邦大选。这些选举将会告诉我们很多答案。不过，我确实认为澳洲政治正出现一些改变，民意调查持续出现的变化十分一致，已经不能忽视。真正的问题是，澳洲人是否真的愿意把执政权交给一个像异国党这样的政党？异国党提出不少听起来很吸引的口号，这些讯息确实能吸引部分选民。但当大家真正深入了解他们的政策及解决方法后，或许就会重新考虑。如果不是这样，而是异国党真的执政，澳洲人也许会发现自己正有一群很会说话但未必知道如何真正解决问题的人来治理。从工党的角度来说，我们也必须认真思考选民究竟向我们传达了什么讯息。生活成本和住房负担显然已经成为民众最关心的议题，人民正在告诉我们单纯管理经济已经不足够，也不能只是做出一些小修小补，政府需要推动真正的改革。人民希望政府采取更有力度的措施，以住房问题为例，人民希望政府更积极参与增加房屋供应，例如资本增值税及复扣税的改革，我认为都是正确方向。这些措施有助年轻人更容易置业，也可以实际影响楼价。与此同时，不少人也会问，为什么最富有的人不用交更多税款？为什么澳洲未能从天然资源中获得更多利益？我们允许企业把天然资源出口海外，他们在海外加工增值后再卖回澳洲，为什么我们不能把增值产业留在澳洲？ 看看挪威的主权财富基金就是一个很好的例子。我的意思是，这可能是选民向所有主要政党发出的讯息。人民已经不希望政府只是做出零碎的小补小修，他们希望看到真正能改善整体经济的结构性改革。如果看看美国的情况，特朗普之所以能够崛起，其中一个原因就是民主党过于注重管理政府，而不是推动改革。他们没有推动人民真正期待的深层改革。我认为澳洲值得从这个经验中学习，这就是我个人的看法。
So, on top of that one, how do you think the government can balance the immediate relief policy and the future planning for the country in those kind of housing immediate relief, or we got a future made Australia policy? How can we balance those different kind of plans?
除此之外，您认为政府应如何在及时纾缓措施与国家的长远发展之间取得平衡？例如，在住房、生活成本纾缓以及 Future Made in Australia 等长远政策方面。
Well, I think the governments at all levels have done quite a few things for immediate relief. So, for example, at the state level,The state Labor government got rid of the wages cap, so now you have public sector wages growing in real terms above inflation, and that spills over into the private sector as well. Things like the toll cap, for example, energy rebates. As I said, we're doing a lot in the area of housing with loosening up the planning regulations so people are more incentivized to build homes. At the federal level, the Labor government's done a lot in terms of industrial relations, allowing the unions a little bit more power to organize. So you've now got real wage growth, same job, same pay. As I said, the capital gains tax reforms, the negative debt, which has got a lot of criticism, but the reality is the tax system was distorted in favour of people wanting to invest in their second, third, fourth, fifth investment property, causing asset inflation, which shut young people out of the housing market. So there's a lot of good things going on. So I think we have to keep those going, but...looking forward to deal with the rise of One Nation and people's concern, we have to do some of that more thoroughgoing intervention in the economy that I was alluding to before. So you're right, it's a balance, but maybe now is the time to tip the balance in favour of that more substantial reform. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 我认为各级政府其实已经推出不少及时纾缓措施。例如在州政府层面，新州工党政府取消了公营部门薪酬增幅上限，因此公营部门薪资现在的增长速度已经超过通胀，这同时也对私人市场薪酬带来正面的连带影响。此外，我们也推出了过路费上限和能源补贴等措施。在住房方面，我们正放宽规划制度，希望鼓励新建更多房屋。至于联邦政府，工党也推出了不少工业关系改革，工会现在有更多的权力组织和代表劳工，这也有助推广实际工资增长。例如同工同酬等措施也开始发挥作用。正如我刚才提到，资本增值税和复扣税改革虽然受到不少的批评，但实际上以往的税制鼓励人们购买第二、第三，甚至更多投资物业，这推高了资产的价格，令年轻人更难置业。因此，我认为我们已经踏出了不少正面的步伐。但展望未来，尤其是面对异国党的崛起以及人民所表达的忧虑，我们可能需要推动更深入、更全面的经济改革。所以您说的对，关键就是如何取得平衡。而我认为，现在或许正是推动更具实际性的结构改革的时候。
And you have mentioned specifically about the One Nation, because we know that in recent days, One Nation has once again attracted significant public attention and support. And what do you believe is driving this trend among, like, especially for the young people here?
您刚刚提到了一国党，近年来一国党再次获得广泛关注和不少选民支持。您认为是什么推动了这股趋势，特别是在年轻选民之中？
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised with young people being so attracted, because my intuition is that a lot of this is a function of education, and when people have the intellectual tools to decipher what's going on, and as I said, ask about what the solutions are, what are their policies, how are they going to fix it, you would think that most people would then not be attracted to One Nation, because it's all about saying controversial things to attract attention. But they have apparently attracted quite a significant support base among young people. So I think it's up to the Labor Party to explain what we're doing and tell young people that we're on their side and trying to do things like get them into the housing market. It's also, too, I think a lot of it is based on, because of the phenomenon of social media, there's so much information out there now, and there's a lot of misinformation too, Sally. It's like, you know, it's a good thing because it democratizes information, but it also has its negatives, because people can just say things without it being based in fact. So I think that's a problem too, that parties and governments have to deal with to try and get the truth out there. So, yeah, it's a difficult situation, but I guess we just have to adapt to the changing circumstances. Social media is here to stay. But I do think our education system is the key, and part of that is making sure that we have, as well as people doing specialist degrees, like, for example, doctors, lawyers, architects, we also have a humanities focus where people have a good general education about what it means to be part of a society, what's the political history of our country, how were the different political parties formed, for example, why do we have to vote, all those sorts of things is critical, I think. So there's a lot more work to do for governments in those areas, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
这是一个很好的问题。坦白说，我对有这么多年轻人支持一国党感到有点意外。我的直觉告诉我，教育在当中扮演着非常重要的角色。当一个人具备足够的分析能力，他们便会思考真正的解决方案究竟是什么。他们会问政策内容是什么，又是否真的能够解决问题。如果大家都能这样思考，我相信不少人未必会被一国党吸引，因为一国党很多时候只是通过具争议性的言论来吸引关注。不过事实上，他们确实已经成功吸引了一批年轻支持者，因此工党有责任向年轻人解释我们正在做什么。我们需要让年轻人明白我们是站在他们的一边，例如协助他们置业，改善生活。我亦认为社交媒体是一个重要因素。今天人们每天接触到大量资讯，但同时亦充斥着大量错误资讯。这正是社交媒体最大的优点，也是最大的缺点。它让资讯更加普及，更容易取得，但同时也让很多人可以毫无事实根据地发表言论。我认为政府及各个政党都需要更加努力把真实资讯带给公众，这确实是一项很大的挑战。不过社交媒体已经成为现实，我们只能学习适应。我始终认为教育才是最重要的，除了医学、法律及建筑等专业教育之外，我们也需要重视人文教育，让大家明白作为社会的一份子意味着什么，了解澳洲的政治历史， 不同政党是如何成立的，以及为什么投票如此重要，这些都是非常重要的。政府在这方面仍然有很多工作需要完成。
Yeah, I think so as well. So, extensive questions about that one, because we know that Pauline Hanson recently have speak publicly about monoculturalism on different kinds of media. So how would you respond to these frameworks or arguments about this one?
我想进一步谈谈 Pauline Hanson. 她多次公开主张澳洲应该走向一个单一文化的社会。您如何回应这些观点？
Monoculturalism, I mean, it's insane, right? Australia is not a monocultural society. You only have to walk down the street, not even in Sydney now, in regional areas where we have so many different ethnicities and people speaking different languages and, by the way, contributing to those local economies in the regions because they're going out there and starting the businesses and creating the demand, which otherwise wouldn't have happened.I just think it's harking back to some era which only really existed for a very small amount of time, you know, in the early days of Australia, maybe up to the 50s, you know, but we haven't had that sort of a nation for a long time, and we've moved way beyond that. And this idea you can now unscramble the egg, I think's crazy. And even if you wanted to,it's not going to advantage the country because, as I said, once you start to look inward and stop immigration, you lose your productivity because you're not bringing in the skills to grow the economy, the birth rate's dropping here, and this idea that you want to, like, create a fortress where you're totally self-sufficient and not open to the world, that's not conducive to economic growth, it's not conducive to free trade, it's not conducive to change, free change of ideas,And it hurts our relationships with other countries too. Like, for example, there's huge opportunities now in this region of the world because you've got these massive economies like China and India, Southeast Asia. The center of gravity of economic power is shifting from west to east. If we start to look inward, our future as a country is much, much more limited. So I think it's all right for her to say these things, monoculturalism, and she appeals to a very narrow base who might initially hear that and go, yes, I want Australia to be for, I don't know, whatever vision they've got, a white Australian person from the 1920s. But it's just not based in reality or practicality.
我认为这些论点根本不切实际。澳洲本来就不是一个单一文化的社会。你只需要走在街上，不只是悉尼，即便是在偏远地区，都可以看到来自不同族裔的人说着不同的语言，而且他们正为当地经济做出巨大贡献。不少移民在偏远地区创业，创造就业机会。也带来原本不存在的经济需求。我认为这种想法其实是希望把澳洲带回一个只曾短暂存在过的年代，或许是澳洲建国初期，一直到1950年代左右。当时的澳洲比较接近单一文化社会，但这种情况早已不复存在，澳洲早已走向另一个阶段。认为今天还可以把历史倒退回去，我认为是不切实际的。即便真的可以做到，对澳洲也没有任何好处。如果澳洲开始变得封闭，停止移民，我们的生产力将会下降，因为我们无法继续吸引推动经济发展所需要的人才。澳洲本身的出生率已经持续下降，认为澳洲可以变成一个完全自给自足与外界隔绝的堡垒是不切实际的。经济发展并不是这样运作的，这对自由贸易没有好处，对知识与思想交流也没有好处，同时也会损害澳洲与其他国家的关系。我们身处的亚太地区本身就充满巨大机遇，中国、印度及东南亚都是全球增速最快的经济体之一，全球经济重心正逐步向 西方向东方转移。如果澳洲选择变得封闭，我们的未来将会受到很大的限制。 Pauline Hanson 自然有权发表他的观点，也许这些观点会吸引一部分人士。有些人听到单一文化这个概念，可能会认为那就是他们想要的澳洲。他们想象的可能是几十年前的澳洲，但我认为这并不符合现实，也不是一个符合澳洲未来发展的时期方向。
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you for that. So we're turning to international affairs, especially international trading. So we know that Australia-China relationship have experienced a significant ups and downs in recent years. So how would you describe the current state of the relationship? And do you believe both countries are moving towards a more stable and constructive partnership right now?
接下来谈谈国际事务。近年中澳关系经历不少起伏，您会如何形容目前两国的关系？您认为两国是否正朝着一个更稳定、更具建设性的伙伴关系发展？
I do. I mean, it's been fairly obvious from our experiences of recent events that, without wanting to be biased, since the Labor government was elected, our relationship has got onto a more solid footing and is improving all the time. Under the previous government, as we know, that relationship was a little bit fraught. At one point, I don't think we were even talking to each other. but it's on a more positive footing now, and that's very, very important for the reasons I said before. I mean, the Chinese people and their economy has been nothing short of a miracle, literally liberating millions and millions of people from agriculture and relative poverty into middle class growth, industrialization. My uncle and my auntie just came back from China. I haven't been yet, I have to go, but they were just very impressed by how advanced that economy is and what the sort of things that China are doing in the whole range of areas, you know, technology, renewables, all the rest of it. So I think it's super, super important that we have a good relationship with China, and we don't have to look at everything through the prism of the old ways of looking through things. That is an adversarial view, like, oh, China's, that's the East. They're sort of like, they're not really us. We're more with America, Europe. I think that's a very outdated way of thinking. I think we have to think that we're all human beings. We've all got an interest in working with each other, loving each other, trading with each other, and lifting everyone up. And to be honest with you, I don't think China has any nefarious attitudes in terms of its militaristic ambitions. I think it wants to be a world power, as it should be, with such a big economy, but I think it's more interested in growing the whole world economy and trading with people. And I think the sooner we get ourselves into that mindset, the better we'll be as a country. I'm not saying we have to get rid of our European background or our ties to America, but we shouldn't have them at the expense of the Chinese relationship. I think you can do everything properly. And I think the Albanese government's doing a reasonable job at that. Yeah. And I think they understand that too.
我认为是的。我无意带有政治立场，但事实是，自工党政府上台以来，中澳关系已建立在更稳定的基础上，而且一直持续改善。我们都知道，在上一届政府执政期间，中澳关系曾经相当紧张，有一段时间，两国几乎连正常沟通都没有。如今，双方关系已明显改善，我认为这一点非常重要。中国人民及中国经济所取得的成就可以说是非常了不起。通过工业化及经济发展，数以千万计的人成功摆脱贫困，进入中产阶级。我的叔叔和婶婶最近刚从中国回来，我自己还没去过，但我很希望能亲身去看看。他们对中国经济的发展程度留下非常深刻的印象。他们谈到中国在科技、再生能源及许多其他领域的发展， 因此我认为澳洲与中国保持良好关系是非常重要的。我们不应再以一种过时对立的思维去看待一切，认为中国只是因为处于东方，所以与我们不同，而澳洲就理所应当属于欧美阵营。我认为这种想法已经过时。我认为我们应该明白，大家都是人类社会的一部分，我们都希望彼此合作，相互贸易，共同创造繁荣。坦白说，我并不认为中国抱有什么隐藏的军事野心。以中国目前的经济规模来说，它希望成为世界主要大国，我认为是很自然的事情。同时，我相信中国更希望推动全球经济发展，并与各国保持经贸合作。我认为澳洲越早接受这种思维，对我们越有利。这并不代表我们要放弃与欧洲的历史联系，或放弃与美国的关系。但同样，我们也不应以牺牲中澳关系作为代价。我相信澳洲完全可以同时维持与各方的良好关系。我也认为Albanese 政府在平衡这些关系方面做得相当不错，我相信政府已理解这一点。
Yeah, we know that because Australia with a historical background, we are have a close relationship with the United States and the British government as well.
Yes.
But nowadays, China as Australia's largest trading partner, we know that. So how should Australia balance this, like, both relationship, and what role do you see the China-Australia relationship playing in Australia in future prosperity, especially with the economy-wise and the migration as well?
澳洲一直以来都与美国及英国保持非常紧密的关系。与此同时，中国也是澳洲最大的贸易伙伴。您认为澳洲应如何平衡这些关系？您认为中澳关系未来将在澳洲的经济发展和移民方面扮演什么角色？
I think this idea of the middle power that people like Bob Carr have been articulating, where we assert ourselves as a relatively open-minded, benign middle power, the sort of Mr. Carney's thesis from Canada. That would be my view. You can do both things, and you don't have to put your whole lot in with one camp. In other words, it's not a binary situation where it's either or. You can do everything. And China understands this, right? They understand our ties with Europe and America. And the truth is, you can have relationships with everyone if you retain your integrity and you keep your word and you operate on the basis of mutual self-respect. Obviously, you're always going to have disagreements, but you cannot have a dialogue. You cannot have a dialogue unless there's mutual respect. If you start off on an antagonistic, negative point of view towards another country or some sort of bias, historical bias, then automatically that creates suspicion and the relationship can't foster. So you have to be open-minded about the relationship. You have to want the relationship, because then you can have the dialogue to fix the things that aren't going so well. If you don't have the dialogue, you can't progress.
我支持澳洲发挥一个具建设性的中等强国角色，像 Bob Carr 等人多年来一直提倡这种理念。澳洲应该成为一个思想开放、具建设性的中等强国。在我看来，我们不需要二选一，这并不是非此即彼的局面。澳洲完全可以与所有重要伙伴维持良好关系。中国也理解澳洲与欧洲和美国有着长久的历史联系。事实上，你可以与所有国家保持良好关系，关键在于保持诚信、信守承诺以及互相尊重。当然，国家之间一定会存在分歧，但如果没有互相尊重，就不可能建立真正有意义的对话。如果一开始便抱有敌意，或者受到历史偏见影响，便会立刻产生互不信任。在这种情况下，双边关系根本无法发展。 我们必须保持开放的态度，真正希望建立良好关系。只有这样，双方才能通过坦诚对话解决彼此之间的问题。没有对话，就没有进步。
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So do you think that the economic raising between China and America will highly affect Australia as well?
The economic?
Raising, yeah, the competition.
您认为中美之间的经济竞争是否会对澳洲带来重大影响？
Inevitably it does, yes. And I think it's a very negative view of the United States if they think that they're going to contain China with some sort of trade war. I think all it does is take the whole world backwards. And Australia is a relatively small economy, even though we're growing. I mean, we've almost got 30 million people now, and potentially we could be quite a powerful middle power in the not too distant future. But inevitably it affects when those two big powers are not getting along well, and there is an attitude that it's dominance as opposed to mutual self-improvement. I think that is a problem, not just for Australia, but for the whole world. But, you know, I mean, Trump's only a temporary phenomena. So maybe if the Democrats get elected next time and they learn their lesson, because they created Trump, maybe we have a better future for America. But the truth is, America is a world power in decline. I don't say that in a sort of a sarcastic or arrogant way. It's just if you look at history, all empires have their rise and falls, and the economic center of gravity is shifting, as I said before, and I think you just have to accept that and deal with it, you know, like it's and to the extent that America can deal with it, what they should be doing is opening themselves up to trade and economic growth instead of trying to hold on to something that's no longer there.
我认为美国如果相信可以通过贸易战来阻止中国崛起是一个错误的想法，这样做只会令全球经济倒退。虽然澳洲持续发展，但整体而言我们仍然是一个相对较小的经济体。澳洲人口已接近3000万，未来有潜力成为更具影响力的中等强国。但只要全球两大强国关系紧张，澳洲必然受到影响。当各方追求的是主导地位而不是共同发展，最终受影响的是所有人。这并不只是澳洲的问题，也是全世界所面临的问题。不过，我认为特朗普只是暂时性的政治现象。如果未来民主党重新执政，并吸取导致特朗普崛起的教训，美国仍有机会走向更正面的方向。事实是，美国正处于相对衰弱的阶段。我并不是带有讽刺或傲慢的态度去说这句话。历史告诉我们，每一个强国都有兴衰起伏。正如我刚才所说，全球经济重心正逐渐转向亚洲。我们需要接受这个现实，并做出相应调整。在我看来，美国应该拥抱贸易和经济合作，而不是试图维持一个已经不复存在的全球主导地位。
Thank you for that as well. So to conclude, what is your vision for Australia's future, not only nationally, but also internationally? And what kind of multicultural society would you like to see over the next decades?
非常感谢您的分享。最后，您对澳洲未来，不论是在国内还是国际舞台上，有什么愿景？您希望未来十年，澳洲会发展成一个怎样的多元文化社会？
I would like to see us maintain our multiculturalism, the attitude that's, as I said, started in the 70s and has perpetuated into quite a sophisticated outlook on people coming in from other countries and social harmony. But also, I think Australia could do a lot better by using all these advantages we have. So all these perspectives from other cultures, the skills that they bring, wedded to our natural resource base, critical minerals, for example, Taiwan, I think, has got something like 70 or 80% of the manufacture of chips. for example, the current debate about data centers is a classic example. It's not a bad thing, us building data centers. It's good, but maybe we should be thinking about what's in the data centers. So the chips that do process all the intelligence, the AI, why can't we make them here in Australia? We've got all the resources, the minerals. We can get the know-how. We should be investing in that capacity and using all that know-how from overseas to help us develop the next wave of domestic manufacturing advantage, which is obviously in artificial intelligence. There's huge opportunities for Australia. We just have to harness all the advantages we've got, use our multiculturalism. And I mean, my view is that Australia could probably sustain a population of 60 million in the not too distant future and use our history and our progressive outlook to try and influence the world for the better. That's what I think would be a good future for Australia.
我希望澳洲能够继续坚持自1970年代以来所新建的多元社文化价值。这套理念已逐渐发展成一种成熟的思维，让澳洲更懂得理解移民、多元文化及社会和谐的重要性。与此同时，我相信澳洲可善用我们现有的优势。我们拥有来自世界各地的人才，他们带来不同的文化背景、观点及专业技能。再加上澳洲丰富的天然资源，这为我们带来巨大的发展机遇。以关键矿产为例，又例如台湾生产了全球约7-8成的先进半导体晶片，目前有关数据中心的讨论也是很好的例子。澳洲新建更多的数据中心本身并没有问题，事实上这是一件好事，但我们应该思考数据中心里真正重要的是什么。例如支持人工智能运算的半导体晶片，为什么澳洲不能自己生产这些晶片？我们本身就拥有所需要的天然资源，技术和知识也是可以建立的，我们应投资发展这方面的能力。我们应该结合海外的人才和澳洲本身的优势，发展下一代先进的制造业。人工智能为澳洲带来巨大的发展机遇，关键在于我们是否能真正把握住这些机会。我们应该把多元文化视为澳洲最大的优势之一。我个人相信澳洲未来完全有能力承载约6000万人口，只要规划得当，我们就能善用历史、多元文化及开放进步的精神，令澳洲成为一个更强大的国家。同时也希望澳洲能够为世界做出更多正面的贡献，这就是我所期待的澳洲未来。
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time and your sharing your thoughts with us today. I think that's conclude amazingly with our conclusion of our interview today.
非常感谢您今天抽空接受我们的访问，并与我们分享您的看法。相信今天的访问就在这里圆满结束。
Great, Sally. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.